So good to see everyone this morning. We hope that you've had a good week. We're thankful for those who are visiting with us, especially some who are family, who have come back to visit, others who have been with us before, and we're thankful that you are here as always. We have others who are on the road at this time, and we are hope that they will have safe travel and that they'll be back with us sometime in the very near future. Would like to mention, mention very quickly before we begin, for all of the VBS teachers, all of the additional material that we ordered for the children's classes is up here on the front middle pew. And so whenever you get ready for all of that, if you haven't gotten it already, you can come up sometime today and pick up whatever supplies you're going to need. And we're looking forward to having our vacation Bible school. Heard the kids already seeing some of the classroom decorations that are up, and they're showing their enthusiasm for it and their anticipation for it. And that's what it really is all about. But we're especially looking forward also to all of the adult classes. As Brother David mentioned, Brother Joe Rushing will be here tomorrow night. I've never been able to hear him speak, and so I'm looking forward to that. But as I mentioned before also, I hope that you will be here Tuesday as well as all the nights. Brother Brad McNutt, I know, will do a tremendous job, as he has every time that I've heard him speak. And so I hope that you'll make a special effort to be here then. And then, of course, Brother Raines on Wednesday will never fail. And so we are looking forward to the week to come, and we anticipate having some good crowds, visitors from outside congregations and folks in the community. And if you're visiting with us today, then we hope that you will make an effort to be here if at all possible as well. Virtually anybody can father a child. It's merely a biological process. But while virtually any man can father a child, I am of the firm conviction that by comparison, relatively few actually feel the role of a father. See, the role of a father is of such monumental importance in the life of children. But it is the case, sadly, that more and more are having to grow up all through their childhood, formative years, and so forth, without them. Now, I am thankful for single mothers who sacrifice and do the absolute best they can in rearing godly children. And I believe wholeheartedly that that can be done successfully. But I am also of the firm conviction that a single parent home on either respect, whether it be a single father or a single mother, while can still do a good job rearing a child, still is going to be lacking. Because that simply does not fit the exact mold that God has provided in Scripture for the home. God intended and has always wanted and expected each home in which children were born and in which children were going to be reared to have both a godly father and a godly mother. And there is no alternative that can ever sufficiently replace God's divine plan. It can do the best job it possibly can, but it simply cannot replace what God has instructed and expected of us in our homes. Now, the roles of fathers and the responsibilities of fathers, contrary to what modern culture would tell us, are not relative to the needs of a child. In doing what little reading and listening to psychologists and child-rearing experts, so to speak, and folks of that nature, it seems to be the case anyways, from my perspective, that there seems to be a growing concept that parents, whether father or mother, should begin to, at an early age, look for the needs of the child and then mold their role as a parent to meet those needs. In my understanding of the Bible, that's not exactly the case. What rather seems to be the case is that there is a standard need, or should I say standard needs, of all children. And that there is a standard role and responsibility that both fathers and mothers must both understand and employ in their role as fathers and mothers. For instance, Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 4, which we will say is our text this morning, the Apostle Paul would tell the Ephesian church, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long upon the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." Now, those four verses tell me something. What they tell me is that there are certain things that are absolutely necessary of parents, whether father or mother, that are necessary to properly fill the role in accordance to God's plan. There are certain things that it takes to be a mom, but there are certain things, too, that it takes of required necessity to be a godly father. And this morning, that is exactly what we want to discuss in our study. What does it take according to the divine plan of God in the home to be a dad? We're not concerned with what modern culture, pop psychologists, child-rearing experts have to say. They might have some degree of insight, but at the end of the day, you and I know one thing. The Bible is God's manual for the home. And when we have any doubt as to roles and responsibilities in fulfilling our responsibilities as parents, then God's manual is what provides the answer. Ephesians 6, I believe we see at least three things that Paul mentions as requirements to be a proper godly father. The first of which is that it takes dedication. There are a number of things that consume our time. There's work responsibilities that every father should have. There are, on some occasions, responsibilities of a recreational nature, whether recreation on behalf of the father or the child's recreation that many parents find themselves consumed in. There are charitable responsibilities, perhaps one's volunteering time, money, efforts of some sort in helping those that are less fortunate, all of which are good and well-intended responsibilities. And I have no doubt that there are a host of others that could consume our time. But where the problem comes in that scenario is that when some take upon themselves those various responsibilities, work, recreation, charity, friendships, hobbies, things of that nature, that in the minds of many, at the bottom of the list comes the responsibilities pertaining to the family. And brethren, that simply should not be so. While obligations must be fulfilled to the best of our ability, because when we commit ourselves to something as Christians, our word is to be our bond. And when we commit ourselves to something, if at all conceivably possible, we recognize the necessity of being people of our word and fulfilling our obligations and our responsibilities, the realization This realization should be foremost in our minds, that among all of our earthly responsibilities and obligations, there is one that is to be at the top, and that is family. Now, notice that I stated among our earthly responsibilities, God and our responsibilities to Him ultimately are first among all matters. But as it pertains to our earthly responsibilities, there is one that is to be at the top of the list and all else is to follow. And that is to be our responsibility to our family. See, what often has become the case is that family decisions have become contingent upon other obligations. And it usually goes along something like this. A situation arises in the home, or a decision that needs to be made arises in the home. But at the current moment, we are committed to something else. Well, in the minds of many, the family situation needs to be put on hold while we tend to these other obligations. I don't think that's the way the Bible depicts the home functioning. I think rather the way we see the Bible telling us the home should function is that all other obligations should rather be contingent upon family obligations and family decisions. If something arises in the home that needs immediate attention, guess what it needs to get? Immediate attention, even if it means putting something else that might otherwise be important on the back burner. God stated that our families are to be at the foremost of our responsibilities. When God instituted the divine role of marriage, Genesis 1, Jesus would later talk about it as well in Matthew 19, He said, "For this cause should a man put away father and mother, cleave himself to his wife, and they twain, or two, would become one." And when we become one as a couple, and then children are added to the family, that family maintains itself as our foremost responsibility. Everything else comes second. That makes it for difficult decisions at times. And I imagine makes for some difficult scenarios in which to live. But if we are truly concerned for the future of our homes, for the future of our children, for the eternity of our souls, that's the way it works. Our families are first, and our dedication must first and foremost be to them. In Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 2, I think we see this principle being applied. Paul said in reference to the children, "Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise." Now to the children, notice he says, your first responsibility in life is to honor, respect, and obey your parents. Now again, I think that obviously is secondary to one's responsibility to God. If ever the two were to come in contrast to one another. But as it pertains to earthly responsibilities, Paul says by inspiration, children, honor your fathers and your mothers. Your first obligation. Now if we turn that around, isn't it the case that if a child's first expectation is to honor father and mother, their parents, that then the parents' first commandment as parents is to be dedicated to the directing of the affairs of the children, tending to their needs, dealing with their problems if it calls for that. Whatever needs to be done as parents, fulfilling that role as parents. I think that's exactly the case. And as fathers, by necessity, we recognize that a number of things must be provided. 1 Timothy 5:8, Paul mentioned there how that if a man is not willing to provide for his own, even those of his own household, that he is worse than an unbeliever. By necessity, there are things that must be provided as fathers. And yet I'm of the firm conviction that there is none more important, while they're all important, food, clothing, shelter, water, all of these things that are necessary to sustain life, that there are none more important than the providing of our time. I read a story the other day, kind of a play on Luke 15, parable of the prodigal son. Someone took that story and kind of turned it around and wrote something called the parable of the prodigal father. And I think it would be very appropriate as to this particular point for us to notice what was said. He wrote, "A certain man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the portion of thy time and thy attention and thy companionship and thy counsel which falleth to me.' And he divided unto them his living, in that he paid the boy's bills, sent him to a select preparatory school, to dancing school, to college, and tried to believe that he was doing his full duty to the boys. Not many days afterward, the father gathered all his interest and aspirations and ambitions and took his journey into a far country, into a land of stocks and bonds and securities and other things which do not interest a boy. And there he wasted his precious opportunity of being a friend to his own son. And when he had spent the very best of his life and had gained money, but had failed to find satisfaction, there arose a mighty famine in his heart, and he began to be in want of sympathy and real companionship. And so he went and joined himself to one of the clubs of the country. They elected him chairman of the house committee and president of the club, sent him to Congress, and he would fain have satisfied himself with the husks that other men did eat. But no man gave unto him real friendship. But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many men of my acquaintance have boys whom they understand, and who understand them, who talk about their boys and seem perfectly happy in the comradeship of their sons, and yet I perish here with heart hunger. I will arise and go to my son, and will say unto him, Son, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight. I am no more worthy to be called thy father. Make me as one of thy acquaintances.' And he arose and he came to his son. But while he was yet afar off, his son saw him and was moved with astonishment. But instead of running and falling on his neck, he drew back and was ill at ease. And the father said to him, 'Son, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and I am no more worthy to be called thy father. Forgive me now and let me be your friend.' But the son said, 'Not so. I wish it were possible, but it is too late. There was a time when I wanted companionship and counsel and to know things, but you were too busy. I got companionship and I got the information, but it was the wrong kind. And now I am wrecked in soul and body. There is no heart left in me. There is nothing you can do for me. It is too late, too late, too late.'" Well, why in the world was it too late? Because the father, this father, forgot one thing. He was so busy dedicating himself to all of these obligations of life to ensure that his boys had the best life he thought they could possibly have, providing them everything they could ever possibly want or need, that he forgot one thing. He forgot to give them his time, and he didn't dedicate himself to their real need. See, what it takes to be a true father, I believe the Bible tells us, it takes dedication. And yes, fulfilling all of the other obligations that we have in life, but ensuring that first and foremost, as it pertains to earthly responsibility, our dedication is at home. Number two, not only does it take dedication, I believe the Bible tells us it takes affection. Psalm 103 and verse 13 David would say, like as a father pitieth his children, so the Lord pitieth them that fear Him. The word pitieth here, as we've talked about before, I think we even mentioned it Wednesday night, doesn't really mean what we have caused it to mean, or what we have brought it to mean in our common language, our modern language. When we think about somebody being pitiful, typically we think about them being down on their luck, being in a hard way of life. When the Bible uses that word, especially when we read it being said about God, it obviously isn't talking about God having a hard way of life. It's talking about Him being full of pity on our behalves. And I think that's exactly the meaning or the thought that David is presenting here, that as a father pities his children, that the Lord pities them that fear Him. And what is it that causes us to have pity on someone? Do we have pity on anyone for whom we do not have great feelings of affection? No. If we don't like someone, we're not going to pity them in whatever situation they're in. If they're hard up in life, if we don't love them, what do we care? Now, you see, we only pity those that we